is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 399, and it's side one, July 27th, 1979. The post office is at it again. They're after my mail. If you write to me, send me letters that are scotch taped maybe across the bottom where their cutter goes, or staple it just at the bottom if you want. I wrote a letter to the editor in the Monterey Herald this last week. I'll just briefly tell you what I stated because I'm really getting tired of this. I said, 5 checks were mailed to me last month, all 5 envelopes, and the letters that accompanied the checks were lost by the post office. All I got was the checks, and I think I mentioned this a while back, what was happening. Another letter the next week was opened in error, cut across the bottom, stapled, and sent to the IRS in Fresno, California. That was a personal letter, a dinner invitation. Another letter to a woman in Oregon was mailed in Carmel. It was postmarked San Francisco, and she received it stamped, received without contents. How would they know that there wasn't a letter inside and it wasn't cut at the bottom and there was no letter inside, so evidently it was steamed open. 4 weeks later, another letter from Oakland that came to my address, home address, opened in error, cut in the bottom, and again that staple in the middle. Another person wrote to me from Fresno, California, and he sent it to General Delivery in Carmel, and it was about Mae Brussel and getting the tapes and writing to me, and one of the men at the post office took the letter and instead of putting it in General Delivery, where I pick up mail from radio shows and or in my mailbox that I've had many, many years, a postal box that comes to the house, he sent a letter back to the person. The message was for Mae Brussel, writing, "What can I do for you?" And I don't know how many of you get personal letters from postal clerks answering your mail. Just this week, again, I got another letter from Concord, California, opened in error. It had the correct address, the name, address, the correct zip code, and it went to the IRS in Fresno. I was told that the reason one letter went to the IRS was because it had the wrong zip code. Why it should go to the stamped in Fresno, I could see a postal station, but the IRS. But this one is properly addressed, properly zipped. The last one that came this week opened in error, and it went there. After the first letter went to the IRS, I figured that I would probably be ripe for some surveillance and annoyance, or else the people writing to me would be. And sure enough, I got a letter this week, $800 owed on my income tax, which was totally untrue, and I had paid my taxes, and I sent them copies of the canceled checks. But they had 3 different Social Security numbers there, which is really impossible to get. I have the taxes made out by H.L. Block, and the right Social Security number was on the slip that they sent me. And then they had 2 other numbers also. So it couldn't have been that reason that they wrote to me, and it was just for harassment. I had to look up the canceled checks and so forth, but it's to let me know. I'm sure as soon as the mail started going there, I knew the tax people would be hassling me, and I wrote to the newspaper asking, is this some more of the dirty tricks, because I investigate the assassination teams from the Treasury Department, and I'm sure that's what's going on. The Los Angeles Times had an article this week. It wasn't a wire service story, so I don't know if it was picked up in your other papers. The BZ drug tests, according to the Los Angeles Times, that were given in the 60s had, in quotes, no lasting effects, the Pentagon said. Then when you read down in the article, further in the article, it says the Defense Department has done no follow-up of those subjected to the test, but contended the studies have shown it only has short-term effects. Now, how can it show it only has short-term effects if they say they did no follow-ups? This is sort of like George Orwell's 1984 or the double talk or double think. If they haven't done the studies, how do they know it has no effects? The Scientologists and the group investigating mind control and Nazis in America, really the strongest and the only group of people working, the American Citizens for Honesty and Government, had a news conference on this, and they've had one particular serviceman who claims that he still has memory lapses, and they've also had another man on Operation Mind Control, I believe the ABC program, a man in France who was given this drug, allegedly LSD, but it has something else in it. It's a quinolinal, I don't know if I pronounced that right, benzoate. I'll spell it out for you on the printed sheet. And it comes in the form of an LSD tablet, but it's described as the most potent hallucinogen known to man. Incidentally, the CIA and the Pentagon, according to this Los Angeles Times article, have 50 tons of this drug stockpiled. They've managed to stockpile enough to disorient the world's population 10 times over. Some of it is stockpiled at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland, where it was first created. Some more is at the Dugway Proving Ground in Utah, where Dr. Lawrence Layton was the head of chemical biological warfare and then moved to Berkeley. It was Dr. Layton's son, Larry Layton, is still down in Georgetown. I haven't seen any trial for the shooting of Representative Leo Ryan or the other people at the airport. Have you? Total silence. He's become a non-person, this Layton boy. After all the furor of the deaths, I haven't read a thing in the newspaper about those trials. Some more of this chemical is at Pine Bluff Arsenal in Arkansas. That's where Martha Mitchell worked when she was friendly with Bebe Rebozo in the early days of her career, and then she went on and married John Mitchell, who became the Attorney General. Air Force enlisted man is being tested, as are other people, as I mentioned, and says that this still has a lasting effect. There was always a problem in our family between my former husband, my first husband, Dr. Marvin Goodwin, over what was administered to our son Marvin in 1967, and I've mentioned this on many tapes. I claim that Marvin was given this poison, and so did Dr. Eric Byrne, who knew Marvin at the time and lived in Carmel. And Marvin all of a sudden changed his personality and became totally psychotic and freaked out. This alleged LSD that was given to him by Carolyn Gilman. I've mentioned her on tapes. Her husband is Peter Gilman, who wrote Diamond Head. They had direct links to Navy intelligence. A man who tunes our pianos has rented a house from Peter for years and said that he was telephonically in contact with no less than Aristotle Onassis. He was disguised as a hippie during the 60s on the peninsula and came to my home for the purposes, allegedly, of writing a book with me on Kennedy, on the assassination, and my son stayed at their home for a few weeks. And when I was in New Orleans with Jim Garrison, he administered this so-called acid trip. His wife handed Marvin and two close friends who are still alive, fortunately, were in the house at the time. And Marvin was writing songs for Bobby Darin. He was just in college, UC Santa Cruz, and then he totally flipped out. He still is writing songs, and he's still doing a lot of productive artwork, but about every 16 or 17 months he has a total breakdown and a relapse, not dissimilar to the original attack, but not as violent. And then he has to get medical care or short hospitalization to get himself back on his feet. His father was a pediatrician in Beverly Hills. We always had a disagreement over what this was. Byrne said he had been poisoned, and here were these people with links to the CIA in the house. There I was with Jim Garrison fighting Clayshaw on that element in New Orleans, and Carlos Marcello and the gang just named by the House Select Committee on Assassinations. I was in a can of worms there when they were in my house here. And yet his father and I never could come to an agreement, even though he was a doctor. My first husband, Dr. Marvin Goodwin, passed away this week. He had a fatal stroke, and even though he was a very fine pediatrician, we had 12 years of disagreement. We were close. We were good friends. 12 years disagreement on what it was that happened to Marvin that gives him these setbacks. And we never could agree on that. He never did explore the government connections. And he was willing to just say that Marvin had psychotic seizures and not that he was poisoned. So I always follow with great interest the drug control program because of what happened in our own home. As a matter of fact, a woman in San Francisco called me this week and wanted me to help be at a trial for her. She had called Walter Bolart, who wrote Operation Mind Control, and she wanted me to help with her son, who she said had electrodes implanted in his teeth at the time of some dental work. And Beauvoir told her to call me. It was quite a compliment. He's in the middle of getting a divorce, another thing that happened to him and his family. As soon as his book was written and he went on tour, his home was broken up, and we've suffered a lot of different things in common, and so have a lot of the other researchers. But Beauvoir suggested she get in touch with Mae Brussel, who she said was described by him as the person who knows the most about the mind control in this country. That was a compliment from Beauvoir. I've spent time with him up in San Francisco when he was there. I couldn't help her because I had to go down to Los Angeles to take care of matters with my sons regarding their father. And it's been a very hard week. It's a hard week because we couldn't ever resolve the differences of opinion on how to handle the problem. And I think this is something that, in the midst of all the research I have here on my desk and table, I have to dwell into a little bit, that while they're very fine people doing research, we won't all agree on how far to go or on what method to do it or what are our priorities. And each of us has a different goal, each has a different way of operating. But it's really a shame, because the sum total of what we're doing, the expense involved, the emotional energy, the machinery of putting material together, requires a support system of other people. It requires using it, getting it to the media, not sitting on it, and you can't get a group of 10 researchers to sit together and decide the priorities, 1 to 10, of what should be exposed. That's a tragedy. I could get 10 people from what George Orwell calls the upper class, and all 10 would agree on a given set of candidates, on a Congress, on a speech, on what they want, how they want to control their investments, on how the justice system should work, on the court systems letting certain people out, locking others up. Crimes are not punished. The guilty get away. They all agree on breaking the rules to hold to what they have or breaking the rules to get more. There's never been a concerted effort of the medical movement to examine what the government did to people during the war. The American Medical Association and doctors, they don't want to know about the mind control or the medical experimentations, even though they may be treating people today that have been poisoned years ago and they don't know it. The gay community, which is a large political bloc, will not help researchers find out who killed John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, or hundreds of others. They simply step in, and when somebody like Harvey Milk is murdered, there are demonstrations and anger on the streets, but that's the extent of the political activity. A gentleman by the name of Larry McDonald, a Democrat from Georgia, is now working in Congress to stop the gay rights movement. He's adamant. He works with Dr. Robert Grant from the Christian Voice, and they have stated it's clear that consensual sodomy and other homosexual acts should never be accepted as legitimate, and they want Congress to act on this and stop the gay rights movement. Mr. McDonald has been mentioned by Byron Watson. Robert Byron Watson is being part of the scheme of assassins that was helped setting up the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King in Marietta, Georgia. And now that the House Select Committee on Assassinations is coming out with their report that there is probably a plan to pay somebody to kill Martin Luther King. The plan involved James Earl Ray and his brothers and men in St. Louis, Missouri, with contacts right down in Georgia, right in the lap of Larry McDonald territory. If the gay community thinks that they can survive any better than the gays did under Adolf Hitler when they were shipped to the concentration camps, they're wrong. Survival depends upon a healthy electoral system where people who represent the wishes of the masses and the majority are in power. And when those people are murdered and you don't investigate those murders, your rights are sure to be diminished in direct proportion to the amount of space you give the killers, and avoid the main problem, which is the diagnosis of the murder situation. And everyone who's interested in surviving this country, who really cares, should you get down to the basics of these murders, they're primary because the social effects that branch out later are felt, and nothing can be changed until we solve these murders. Another article this last week, more gunfire on Indian land, Indian reservations in Minnesota, and sending Indians to prison, harassments and convictions going on there. Again, the Indian leaders, Mr. Banks and Mr. Means and Mr. Pelletier, who escaped and was brought back to Lompoc this week, don't address themselves to the killing of people like John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, or Mr. Oaks, the Indian leader, or many of the other Indian leaders. They line up, they use people like Mark Lane as their attorney, yet they don't address themselves at all to the assassinations. And I fail to see how John Connally or George Bush or Ronald Reagan or Howard Baker is going to help Indian affairs. The people that are running for office now, or Jimmy Carter or any of them, are not interested in that, and the closest we ever got to it was when John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy were alive. There seemed to be a chance or a hope that some changes would be made in this country, particularly Robert Kennedy, if he had a chance to become president. There was one article in the paper this week, Blacks Found and Discover Cancer Later Than Blacks, and they're not finding out why the mortality rate comes so fast with blacks, 22% higher for blacks than whites for cancer. You remember in 1974 I was writing articles about Dildrin in the food programs for blacks. Another point is that they can't get treatment in hospitals, and white people get more expensive, very expensive treatment in the advanced stages, but it's perfectly obvious that black people are, low-income people are not able to nip it. They can't afford the doctor's visits. They can't afford to stay away from the work. And nobody is investigating the possibility of the purposeful poisoning of them in their food that would cause them to have 22% higher cancer rate than whites. Another article about the jobless blacks that was in the paper this week, the unemployment among black teenagers is twice as high as the national figure. The government figure is 36.3% of the blacks from age 16 to 19 are jobless. And there's a report now from the National Urban League that it's really much worse, that 60% were without full-time employment jobs in 1978. Now, 44% of those had a high school education, and 15% attended college. And the head of the Urban League said, if lack of education and not racial discrimination was the primary factor, then the employment rates for blacks and whites with similar education should be comparable. And there was a warning by a spokesman, Alexander Allen, a member of the National Urban League, that we better look out, that the blacks just might be in trouble. He said, black youth today are in deep trouble. But do the blacks ask who killed Malcolm X? The men in jail serving time said that they were paid to do it. Do they ask about Jonestown? Do they care about Medgar Evers, about Martin Luther King? When the House Select Committee said there was an probable assassination to kill Martin Luther King this week, how many people from the black community who have taken that mobile ladder up to the next, from the working class to the lower middle class, gone up that rung of the ladder, how many are going to be behind researchers like myself saying, let's really find out what happened? The black friends that I've had, they are not interested really in my research, except once in a while on occasional radio shows. They're really not concerned who killed any of their leaders, even though there were times at the Watergate exposés, for example, when E. Howard Hunt was talking about for the reasons to kill Fidel Castro, he said you have to kill the leaders because it's easier to take the country. The black people are not together on what is happening. The whites are not together. In New York, they're talking about killer disease feared in New York City. Another article this week in Jamestown, New York, they're getting samples of Legionnaire's disease and fear of a breakout of Legionnaire's disease in New York and in Wisconsin. Who in the heck believes there even was such a thing as Legionnaire's disease? How do you know what this is and if there can't be large epidemics or put in air conditioning ducts again to test or what are they going to do with those 50 tons of LSD? Incidentally, the LA Times article that I mentioned before says that some of this leaked out of one of the arsenals. They had a leakage, and the people near there got sick from it, from this hallucinogenic drug, and were taken to the hospital and then released. It wasn't serious, but this 50 tons that's disseminated within three states can cause a sickness if it leaks. No serious injuries, but three workers were exposed. Now, how do you get exposed to this BZ drug if it's in acid? Is it airborne also that you get exposed to it and then get a temporary sickness and have to go into a hospital? There's a lot of questions to be asked that no doctor, Ralph Nader, the others aren't addressing themselves to. I don't see the articles. I take all these newspapers. I see all the problems. I hardly, never, ever see a spokesman attacking, getting to the root of the problem. Something is vitally wrong, and we have to reexamine our thinking to find out why people simply can't get to the root of the problem. They read that it's happening. They must read the same papers that I'm reading, but there isn't a spokesman for any of these groups trying to solve an overview of what is happening to them as they all sink down lower and people get more sickness, more leaks, more accumulation of weapons, of mind control drugs, and so forth. I don't know where the energy is to combat this out among the masses or among the select few. There's just a very, very few that are even aware of the problems. A few people are disappointed that when I tell them that I'm writing a book on Oswald Doubles, they've expressed their disappointment. They wanted me to take on the whole power structure at one time and tell you what happened each year and how it came down, how we got to the brink of this apocalypse. I received a letter from Charles Spears in Texas, who probably is the best student of history that I know, the best documented historian, the most active, really the best activist, along with myself, who is constantly hitting the media and persons in the media and in public life with various pieces of information, a real fighter. And he wrote to me, and I just want to read this to you because it's an example of some of the divisiveness that people do have among each other. He said, "What I want isn't about how many doubles Oswald had, but rather tie the whole unbelievable era, 1959 to 79 or 1919 to 79. There are so many angles, so many important matters that should not be left out of the total picture. I don't know anyone but Mae Brussel," he wrote to me, "who has the total knowledge and capability to do it. I was disappointed to find out that's not what you are about." Now, this again has to do with communication. This is why I want to share it with all of you, because if it's a communication between two people moving in the same place, it has to be a question of communication with a large number. When Charles writes, "What I want isn't how many doubles. I wanted to find out, and I was disappointed that you weren't doing the total thing." I think it is a better view to say, why specifically did you choose the doubles? And then I can give you a reason. If I've done 15 years' work of research, if I've accumulated this mass library with three rooms flowing with files and so forth and books and articles, I can't even list them. They come in so fast. The real question isn't what you expect of me, what you want from me, or that you should be disappointed in my choice. It really should be, why are you doing it? Maybe if I understand that better, maybe we can both take the same trip to the same place easier than what your expectations are of me. I built my reputation up for collecting this material. That's a big job to put on somebody's shoulders. I hope you have trust in me that the effort that I'm making to accumulate the material for the one book is important. Why am I not writing a whole expose to hit the power structure at one time and pinpoint them to these dates? Well, first of all, I don't have the time or money to take that job right now. That would be about my fourth book. I have the books here, and I have the filing cabinets. I have the articles, but I need many, many more drawers. I need, the material has to be filed and cross-filed to get the book right. I need a staff of 2 or 3 people, and I'd need at least 12 or 14 more filing cabinets to just line everything up in chronological order, because that's the way I think, and that's the way I do it. And you need time and space and money to tackle that job. I can put it in simplistic terms, the way the system works, but it would take more. It would take an advance from a publisher, which I'm not asking for, and it requires a bigger application for a whole series, like a Will Durant type of operation, from 1919 to the present date. Secondly, I want my first book to be a good book. I want it to be saying many things at the same time, and I want them loud and clear. A lot of newspaper articles are coming out because the House Select Committee is issuing their second Warren Report. I want to show that what the first Warren Report did was to purposely work in collusion with the assassins, that it didn't have new information that came out later that they didn't have access to. They weren't working in the dark with a few documents from the CIA, such as the fact that the CIA was planning to kill Fidel Castro, and therefore they couldn't get the motives that maybe the Castro Cubans came in and so forth, or that the organized crime worked with the CIA. They knew that all along. I want to show the way the authors of the Warren Commission and this new book have come out, for specifically the Warren Commission, abused disinformation. I want to show how vital evidence was destroyed the first time. I want to show how primary witnesses started to be murdered and are still being murdered. I want to show in this book the way patsies are created and the way agents get away. It isn't an outdated book. It's something that is happening all the time. The U.S. News and World Report has a story on the House Select Committee's discoveries this week. It's dated July 30th, 1979. One more theory on the Kennedy murder. And it says, the committee shows evidence that Oswald and his slayer, Jack Ruby, had connections with organized crime figures and anti-Castro Cubans. And U.S. News and World Report wants to put Lee Harvey Oswald and Marguerite Oswald down with the Jack Ruby milieu. Now, I have to ask this question. When you read that in the New York Times or in the New Report or the U.S. News World Report or Jack Anderson, that Oswald had connections with organized crime and anti-Castro Cubans, before you use the word Oswald, you have to say, well, which Oswald was it? Which Lee Harvey Oswald? Was it the 5'9 in New Orleans that had a stubby beard and a gruffy, dirty outfit, or was it the 5'11 who was bright and educated, who was one of the finest people in radar scanning in the Marines, who was in Navy intelligence, who worked with the CIA in the Soviet Union, who was at home at night with his wife and daughter? His wife was pregnant with a second child. Which one are you talking about? If you don't start by delineating Oswald in capital letters, or Oswald with a quotation mark, one being the Lee Harvey Oswald, the son of Marguerite, the 5'11", who was in the Marines, who was at the U-2 bases, who was with Priscilla Johnson in the Soviet Union, and Mr. Schneider and McVicker of the CIA in the Soviet Union, and Eileen Mosby in the CIA, and with the CIA defector from Rand Corporation, Mr. Webster. If you're not talking about the super spy Oswald, if you don't delineate 5'11", from that grumpy guy that worked with David Ferry and Clay Shaw in New Orleans, then this is the starting point. That is why my reason, I don't have to defend myself, but I only bring it up because the effect of non-communication or expectations about what I should do then disappoints people instead of trying to understand why I'm doing it. When you read about Oswald being in the club of Jack Ruby and linking Oswald the communist to Rubinstein the Jew, when you read the various people saying he was in that club, which one are you talking about? It makes all the difference in the world. One is going to be a patsy and killed. One is going to make a getaway, and you have to delineate. You have to make it loud and clear who they are speaking about. On the other side of this tape, I'm going into a brief biography from the Warren Commission hearings, about Curtis Laverne Crawford, who worked in the nightclub of Jack Ruby, who saw Lee Harvey Oswald in the club, and why it's so important to say, was this one setting up the cover story? Because right now, you know the triangle I gave you, past listeners, on the expose of the Warren Commission hearings, another layer of cover-up was the maybe the anti-Castro Cubans and organized crime. If you want to get to Reinhard Gehlen and the Nazi operations, if you want to expose the real assassins, you have to knock out the patsies, the subterfuges, the phonies. And the only way you can do that is to separate which Oswald they're talking about and get on to which one was in the intelligence system and which one was set up in event that the pieces fell apart, that they could keep linking organized crime or maybe a branch of the anti-Castro Cubans and keep it away from those people in Washington who planned the assassinations, who still plan the assassinations, and will keep murdering as they tighten their power.